Yes, sir. Welcome back to the Leader Hour number 2 of KNBR tonight. Dieter Kurtenbach with you until 10 p.m. on KNBR and KNBR-FM San Francisco, the sports leader and a Cumulus station. Still funky. Still funky to say that. Let's talk to the funkiest guy we know in the NBA. His name is Dan Favalli. He covers the entire league for Bleacher Report. He is a KNBR Tonight All-Star, if there ever was one, and he joins us now on the UMA guest line. Dan, how's your Friday going, buddy?
It is going well. How's your Friday going, Dieter?
It's great. Better now that we're talking about the association. Let's start with the news out of Portland today. Olshi is out, and I get the sense that we were just talking about the Seattle Seahawks, who were owned by Paul Allen along with the Portland Trail Blazers. And it just feels like since his death, both of those teams have been placed in trust, that things are just kind of falling apart on both fronts. Tell us what's going on up in Portland and sort of what people are expecting the ultimate fallout to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think people, the general sense is they expect the Blazers to eventually enter like this period of overhaul. And I think people still be shocked if it's in the middle of the season, but you know, all these harbingers, it was something they probably should have at least considered over the off season. But you just look at how incapable they've really sort of been at the top of this organization over the past, you know, just the past couple off seasons, and the inability to turn this Blazers team or to meaningfully improve them. You had Damian Lillard, like, not really requesting a trade over the off season, but he definitely took free agency meetings. Right. And now just this Olshi stuff. You got rid of him after you let him hire a head coach in Chauncey Billups. And so what is going to become of that? Are you going to keep the interim GM? There have already been some names floated out there. And whoever takes over is probably going to want their own coach installed there. So I don't know if Damian Lillard is definitely going to be traded before next season, but I would expect there to be some appreciable changes to this roster and the organization at large before next year.
My goodness, that is that's heavy. Because it's not as if Portland is a team that can just quickly turn it around, right? Like, there's no clear path to getting back to mediocrity if the Portland Trailblazers trade away a Dame Lillard. It's a tough market. It's a tough market to be successful in. They got pretty close. I mean, they ran into the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals, but that was pretty close. And for things to fall the way that they've fallen, and by the way, for Chauncey Billups to be in charge there, when you consider the circumstances and all the controversy around him when he was hired, like, what a mess, man. Just what a mess.
Yeah, oh, it's a disaster. And it's, you know, you look at their record and it's 11-12, one game under 500. It's technically not the end of the world. You have Damian Lillard with this abdominal injury. The West is still like kind of brutal. That they'll probably make the play in, but you would imagine they're most likely going to get whacked in the first round if they even make it that far. And I think, you know, if you trade Damian Lillard, if you blow up the roster, I think you can adequately reload with picks and prospects to start a rebuild. I think the real issue for them is if they don't want to go that route is what do you do to make yourself a contender in the West? And I just don't know that they have that move in them. They tried to hit these singles and doubles. And, you know, I think Robert Covington was a smart move a couple years ago. Ditto for Larry Nance Jr. this past offseason, but they've just been unable to land that other big fish or to pull off that other blockbuster trade, and I think it's really coming back to haunt them now.
Two teams that are contenders, of course, are the Suns and the Warriors. We talked about the Suns very early in the season. All they've done since then is win 18 straight games, so shows what we really know. We're like, they're kind of coming out a little bit sluggish. Nope, they were just lulling us to sleep so they can rattle off 18 straight, and the Warriors have been the talk of the NBA. I'm of the mindset that these two teams are going to be the torchbearers for the league, that they're going to be the two teams that sort of set the standard by which everyone else needs to match up to for the rest of the season, and that every one of their matchups from here on out, both tonight's game and the game on Christmas and beyond, are just must-see TV. Are you of the mindset that these are clearly the two best teams in the NBA and third place is pretty distant?
Yeah, and they're so good that you almost can't say either of them are the odds-on favorites to win the title. You would almost want to pick someone from the East like Milwaukee because that path is going to be easier. And I hope we get a Phoenix Golden State Conference Finals right now. I haven't seen anything from any other team in the West that intrigued me enough. Like, the Jazz are there, they're fine, but they're just, there seems to be something off there when they're not waxing the Celtics, apparently. So these are clearly the two best teams in my mind. It's kind of a shame that we saw Devin Booker go down with a hamstring injury in that first meeting between them. He's not going to play in Friday night's matchup, but hopefully they'll be at full strength or close to it, because we know Klay Thompson's been out when they play on Christmas, I think. But these are the two teams that I think in the West specifically you have to watch. And if you were to say that, you know, one of them is going to win the title, I don't know who is going to argue with you.
No, yeah. And the coolest part about it for me, and I don't know if you agree with this or not, is just I so enjoy watching both of them play. Right, like, listen, I'm in the Bay. I'm a Warriors homer about things. I get it. But Phoenix, they play basketball the right way. And you go around the league, that is not as common as you would hope it to be. I mean, there's still the cheating. There's still the sort of clunky styles. The Suns play a really entertaining, really aesthetically pleasing style of basketball, while different than the Warriors, sort of on the same level. That's got to count for something too, right?
Yeah, these two teams are so fun to watch. And I think, you know, the Warriors can be more frenetic when you're watching them. And there's, like, the Suns are – they've been playing fast this year. They're fourth in average possession time on offense. But they, like, go for the jugular, and they'll manipulate defenses a little bit more than the Warriors. But they're still just both so entertaining. And you look at – you know, you're mentioning Phoenix. They've cleaned up a lot of the low-hanging fruit, where they've just decided, hey, we're not going to really offensive rebound this year because we want to get back in transition. And so it makes them, you know, you look at them up and down the roster, they're just so well-balanced in the way they're playing and the way that Golden State has been playing. I think you could probably argue that these are the best two-way teams in basketball. There are obviously a couple other squads that rank in the top 10 of both offense and defense, but you watch how many areas both Golden State and Phoenix can really dominate in, and the different styles that they can really play. And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find two more adaptable teams in the league right now.
I believe in the NBA, as we talked to Dan Favalli of Bleacher Report, that the truth is always found in the margins. So Phoenix has a plus 7.8 point differential. The Warriors have a plus 12.6, which is best in the NBA. Utah is a regular season team, so they're going to have a nice big number of about 9.7. But then I look at the general standings. We're not even getting deep into it. Just the standings in the Eastern Conference. And Brooklyn is in first place, as I think most expected them to be, though certainly not in the manner most expected them to get there. You go down to 11th out of the play-in tournament. As of the conversation we're having right now, it's the Philadelphia 76ers. They are 12-11, right? Like the Knicks, 11-11. They're 4.5 games back. Like the team that's out of the playoffs and the team that is in first place in the Eastern Conference are separated by 4.5 games. I think we're all just presuming that the Bucks will just take this when it's all said and done, because it's pretty clear they're the best team. Maybe Miami can get in on that conversation. Maybe Brooklyn has enough firepower. But my goodness, what the hell is going on in the Eastern Conference that no one can seem to separate from anybody else?
Yeah, it's actually been glorious to watch when you really think about it. I fully believe if the Bucks were healthier this year, you know, Brooke Lopez, you had Middleton miss a ton of time, Drew, they would probably be the team that would have started to run away. And I think you can make the same case for the Nets if they had Kyrie. But even the James Harden stuff is weird. Like, this is game is a James Harden game, and every other game is a non-James Harden game. So I'm with you. I think it's the Bucks clearly. And then after that, even though the Nets are at the top of the conference, there's like this weird mishmash, and I think you can, like you said, talk yourself into Miami, but they've been so banged up, and their shooting can be all over the place. Is it Chicago? Like, are they the second best team? Is it
Atlanta?
You know,
I love my Bulls,
but I might be inclined to go with Atlanta.
Atlanta's an interesting conversation, to be sure. I actually want to get your thoughts on a team that's out of this picture, because I said the truth is in the margins, and the Indiana Pacers have a positive point differential this season, but are 9-16. I know that's a team that's kind of constantly in a state of flux, right? Just small market. They don't want to spend any luxury tax. They, you know, can't seem to get over any humps. And that's been the case for pretty much their entire existence in this league. What have you made of the Pacers so far this year? And could that be a team that just says, listen, it's not working. We could keep trying to fight this, but let's blow it up.
Yeah, I think they are probably, you know, them and the Kings, I would guess, are probably the top of the blow-up candidate list right now. And look, the Pacers have had some really good wins, But they've had some really bad losses, including against the Heat on Friday. They didn't have Butler or Adebayo, and they just got absolutely waxed. And when you watch the Pacers, it's tough to get a feel for what exactly they are. It feels like you're watching a different team every single game and not for the better. And when you look at their options, they do have a lot of good or should be good players on the roster, but they're not built to make a consolidation trade. Like, how are you acquiring a star with this roster? And so if you keep going down this path to where you just can't have a consistent identity and you have, you know, guys like Domas and Caris LeVert going at it in the middle of the game, I think you have to look long and hard about, hey, it's probably time to maybe not necessarily start over, but divest some of these more expensive players that we have on our roster.
So you mentioned the Sacramento Kings. They obviously fire Luke Walton as their head coach, which was about a year and a half too late, but, you know, spilt milk, whatever. They're 9-14. They're, as we speak, two games back of a play-in tournament spot. They don't play a lick of defense. Offensively, they are a challenge at times, though Harrison Barnes has been very good this year. I don't know. Is there any reason to think that maybe Alvin Gentry can get Sacramento turned around, that there's something that the Kings can do to be relevant this year, or are they just bad like they've always been bad?
I think, look, if you're the Kings, you can definitely hope for some progression on the offensive end. Halliburton, De'Aaron Fox getting better, Buddy Hield not. You know, he started off the season on fire. He's got a little bit cold. But you're right. Their defense is, it's probably hopeless. I don't think they should be a, necessarily a bottom five team with some of the talent that's on the roster, but they don't really have any true wings. I don't know what the trade would be out there for them unless they're going to get a Pascal Siakam or a Ben Simmons, and perhaps you can sneak your way into 10th because Denver's so banged up, or what's going to happen with Dame in Portland. I know people have floated the idea that he might need surgery since this is an injury he's been dealing with for years, apparently. But, like, what does that do? I know, like, that doesn't end your playoff drought. The play-in does not count as the playoffs to me. And so I don't think there's any reason for, like, meaningful immediate hope. But if you're the Kings and you're like, can talk yourself into, yeah, maybe we can finish 10th or 9th, I think that would sort of be the extent of their ceiling when you look at the rest of the conference right now, especially with the way that Minnesota has been perking up.
Let's talk about that. What the hell's going on with Minnesota? They've been playing not just interesting basketball, they've been playing, like, I can't believe I'm saying this, fundamentally sound two-way basketball, the Minnesota Timberwolves. Like, Chris Fitch must be really good at this whole coaching thing.
Yeah, I mean, their defense has been a revelation of late, and they're just, they're so aggressive on defense, and it just works. And they're probably, you want to see more from them on offense. It'd be nice if someone other than Karl Anthony Towns could hit a three on this team consistently. But you really just look, I mean, you do have guys who, aside from Towns, who can at least give you these big nights, and Adilo coming up huge against the Nets, or Edwards is just so strong, even when he's not shooting
he's making it.
Yeah, and then Malik Beasley's like kind of hitting three-pointers now.
Good player.
Like, that's good for them. I think, you know, I don't know that he has a chance at winning Coach of the Year, but I don't look at this team, even with how well Jared Vanderbilt and Jaden McDaniels have defended, as a team that should be in the conversation for one of the 10 best defense in the league right now. They're seventh, and yet there they are. So that's just a team to monitor. I'm curious to see if this is all sustainable, but I think their body of work over the past 2-3 weeks, I'd be inclined to say that they're not only a playoff team, but I would probably almost predict them to finish in one of the top six spots in the West right now.
Yeah, that's where I'm at right now. There's a long ways to go. That's a team that I think everyone's buying stock to go up on. I ask you, Dan Favalli, Bleacher Report, if you had to buy – if you had to short a team, I guess is the statement. If you had to say, nope, it ain't going to keep going like this, I'm shorting them, they're going down, 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 who are you taking right now?
I want to take the Lakers, but I'm going to take the Clippers just because they have some stuff that they can't figure out on offense to me without Kawhi Leonard or making a trade for another, you know, shot creator type. And so they just feel like they're a team that's built to, if not plunge, seriously drop off. And they're in seventh right now. And I would also look at, in the top six specifically, there's Memphis. It's weird. So John Morant's going to miss some time. Jaren Jackson Jr. has played well, but the defense is bad there. And so they're a team, when you're just looking at the top six exclusively, I probably, you know, I don't trust the Lakers at all, but I think I trust the Grizzlies just a tad less at this point.
Well, and we also know that LeBron will make a big swing for a trade. Like, the Lakers aren't done yet. I don't know how they're going to do it, but they will find a way. we do have to talk about Memphis beating the Thunder by 73 points yesterday. Do the Thunder get to continue in this league, or is that enough to just relegate them to the G League forever? I mean, there's tanking, then there's losing by 73. It's just unacceptable. And the Grizzlies didn't even have Ja Morant, as you alluded to. Like, this is a real problem for the league, no?
It is, but if you're going to let the Houston Rockets exist, you know, I don't know what you're supposed to do to the Thunder, who have been more competitive than them this
True.
Season. I think,
True.
Look, they didn't have Giddey, they didn't have Shea, they didn't mm-hmm. have Kenrich Williams or Derek Favors. That being said, they absolutely deserve to be destroyed for that performance. It was despicable. And look, they have so many draft picks that I think it would be reasonable to find them one for a performance. Look, if you lose by more than 50, there should be some repercussion. I don't even care if you're a contender. If you're, yeah. you know, if the Dallas Mavericks yeah. lose by 50, there should be some sort of punishment for that.
You don't get a second round draft pick. I do want to ask you about the Dallas Mavericks. I just remembered them for the first time in a long time, not too long ago, and remembered, of course, that Kristaps Porzingis is probably my least favorite player in the NBA because you're 7'3". I'm not one for the post game, but I don't know. Maybe act like you're 7'3" every now and again instead of pretending like you're Jordan Poole or something to that effect. What do you make of the Mavericks and their unwatchable style of basketball?
I don't know what to make of them. It's just like they're above 500, but they have the point differential of a team that's like lost probably four or five more games
right.
than they've actually
yes.
lost.
Yes.
If I had the guts, I'd predict them to be the team that kind of falls off. But I'm just assuming you have Luka so that they're going to be able to outplay their poor coaching. But I mean, it's just there's so many different things. It's can they get a secondary shot creator? Can you convince Tim Hardaway Jr. to stop taking mid-range jumpers?
No.
Can you convince Kristaps to kind of do the same thing? Can you know? I have PTSD from watching Willie Cauley-Stein miss so many layups this season. There's a lot of things wrong here with them, and so you have to trust in Luka, and Jalen Brunson's been great for them. But they're a team where I can't necessarily put my finger on it. Aside from their one significant player short of being a real threat in the West, something just feels off with them.
Well, I can appreciate that, and we'll have a full long season to figure out what exactly it is, though I think it's pretty much all of the things that you listed and then some, plus you know, Jason Kidd as their head coach, as we talked to Dan Favalli of Bleacher Report. I want to get a little granular here. We usually stick with teams and concepts, but Jordan Poole has been so good as of late for the Warriors, and I know you've been keeping an eye on it just because it's the Warriors and you're a Bay Area guy. Like, what have you made of Jordan Poole's performance as of late? Every time I think this dude has sort of maxed out and has kind of reached his limit of how much of a contributor he can be for the Warriors, he seems to take it to another gear. You add Klay back into the mix. Now you got three guys. Klay doesn't really create his own shot, but he definitely finishes as well as anybody from beyond the arc. You got some weapons there if you're the Warriors, no?
Yeah, and look, I mean, I'm just curious to see when you get James Wiseman back, is Jordan Poole like kind of the ticket to making him work in the second unit as that more rim roller where you can run pick and roll with? But Jordan Poole specifically, the way he's been shooting, the way he's been finishing at the rim, if you add him into, let's say, if they have lineups with him and Klay,
right.
steps off the court, like you're probably really cooking with something there. And the fact that you've played so well in the non-Steph minutes relative to last season anyway, this year, that's something you have to feel good about. And I think the way Poole has played of late is probably even more incentive for the Warriors to do absolutely nothing at the trade deadline. I know people
totally.
Are sort of wondering if this start is sort of fire for them to do something significant because that title window is so clearly open. Mm-hmm. My question is just like, what do you do? And, you know, they're probably no worse than the second best championship contender at
right.
this point. And I do believe that Poole sort of uptick since he was on a little bit of a roller coaster to start the year. That's huge for them because anything you can get in those non-Steph minutes, especially knowing they become fewer and further between once you get to the playoffs, that becomes absolutely monstrous for you.
Talking to Dan Favalli of Bleacher Report, final question for you, my friend. What's the deal with my boy Zion? I mean, he's representing for the Chunky Boys right now, but it might have gone a little bit too far. What's the latest with him?
Yeah, the fact that he's feeling soreness in that foot. I think I saw a video of him warming up recently, and he actually
yeah.
looks like he's in a lot better shape than he was. But, you know, if you're the Pelicans, maybe we're too early to say we need to just shut this down for the rest of the season. But,
oh, man.
You know, like, let's take the timetable out of this, and they can reevaluate him in March or something like that. Because
Damn.
He was the one who was optimistic about his comeback at Media Day. He was like, I expect to be ready for opening night. And now we're into December, and the fact that he's feeling soreness, it's just, it's a red flag everywhere. And you hope this doesn't become like something that's reoccurring for his future, but he's already had so many health issues since entering the league. It just, it makes you wonder, you know, what is his future in the NBA? What is his future with the Pelicans? This offseason is going to be mega interesting in the most unsettling way possible for them. But I do think we're at the point this season specifically where I'd probably be floored if we saw Zion play basketball before 2022.
Wow. Mega Gray Godin vibes right there, man. Not good. No bueno.
Oh, man. Why would you even put that out there? Good
I'm
Lord.
Sorry. It's the first thing that came into my head until it's proven wrong, which I'm begging for every day because I love watching him play basketball. It's going to stick there. Now it's in your head and the audience's head, too. Sorry about that. Just the way it goes. My show. We're gonna travel down that nasty road. Dan, it's always a pleasure when you join us here on KMBR tonight. You're one of our favorites. The analysis is second to none, my friend. Let's do it again real soon.
Most definitely. Thank you for having me as always, Dieter. Take care.
Dan Favalli, ladies and gentlemen. Just bringing it. My man had Indiana Pacers takes on the ready. I didn't even prepare him for that. I just wanted to know about it. I'm just looking at the standings saying, what's up with the Pacers? And he's like, let me tell you what's up with the Pacers. That's why we bring Dan Favalli on KMBR tonight, man. What a dude. What a dude. Sorry, did a little Jim Rome there. Great hit as always. That man, nothing but bangers from Dan Favalli. Nothing but bangers at all. Let's see if Lofa Tutupu can follow that up. We're going to have him on in just a little bit, but we got to take a break. Kurtenbach is with you until 10 on The Sports Leader.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time.
Yep.
Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.